are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents, and students worldwide.
Interest in distance learning, it's nothing new. Online learning is nothing new. Distance learning, there was an interest in that. I think it was somewhere in the 1800s. No internet back then, but, you know, mailing back and forth to engage with academics that were far away.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Dr. Erica Maldonado, course development lead at 2U, working with universities to make graduate degrees and higher learning courses accessible online. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the difficulty of quickly producing online courses during the pandemic, why 5 to 7 minute online education content is more effective, and overall trends in online education.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am delighted to be joined by Erica Maldonado. Erica, good morning to you in the East Coast, or the West Coast I should say.
Hi, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
So for listeners, Eric and I follow each other on Instagram, and some people obviously in the UK might not be familiar with your work, Erica. You're a kind of EdTech online specialist, higher education particularly. Could you tell listeners a little bit more about you and what you do?
Yes, absolutely. So I work for an online education company called 2U, and we work with universities to put their content online. So we have, I work on the degree side, focusing on putting graduate degrees online, but there are parts of the company that also focus on short courses and different types of approaches to online learning. So I'm on the degree side, and my background is, my master's is in learning technologies. So it's really been something that I've been studying for quite a while. I got that about 10 years ago. And then I also have my doctorate in organizational change and leadership. And in my doctorate, I focus on training teams to build effective online learning. So wow. It's been quite a ride. I really love this field.
Yeah. So, let's go straight to the kind of online technologies. So you've been doing that for a number of years. So I guess the switch during the pandemic, COVID, was relatively straightforward for you. And I suspect your expertise was in great demand.
Yes, absolutely. I will say one thing that's been frustrating me about the pandemic and online learning is that because we have programs coming in, I'm not saying my company, but I'm just saying online learning as a whole, some programs have had to come into online learning so quickly and really just have to adapt to this, to the technology, just quickly and coming in. And I think that's frustrated learners and instructors, because they've had to learn this new technology, and really that doesn't really aid in how they teach. So why that frustrates me is because, being in the field for so long, I know that to produce a great high quality online course, it really takes some time. Generally, I would say about a year or so to produce something that's really great. And that's because you give so much thought into making sure that the content that you're producing online for your asynchronous components, they're all really tied to the goals of the course. That takes a lot of thought. And then the other part of it too is planning that synchronous live session time, tying it in with the asynchronous components, and then developing assessments, formative and summative, that give the students opportunity to really develop their learning in the course. So there's all these different components that take some time. So I think the pandemic has shown us, or really highlighted, that the online learning space, putting a course online, it isn't just turning on your camera and teaching and saying, no, hey, let's go.
There's a lot of work involved. So in your kind of experiences over the last year, generally, you know, the teachers and kind of colleagues or students even around you, how's the bell curve been? High anxiety, high workload at the beginning? Has it kind of settled down, or is it still just as stressful?
I would say it's just about the same. Just, I think the good thing about the company that I work with now is online learning is really what it's what we do. So having more programs come in is certainly giving more work to the company and kind of adds to that stress going up and down. But it's something that I think we've had to, you know, manage previously.
Right. So part of my show, Erica, I like to get to know who I'm interviewing. So I'd like to just unpick your 16-year-old self. What are you like at high school?
In high school? High school Erica was, I think, I was reserved and really just finding myself. I think I was, one thing that I did know at that point in high school is that I did want to go into some sort of production. Right. So that ended up being educational media production, working in tech. But I was in a TV production program at my high school, Notre Dame High School in Sherman Oaks, California. And luckily I had a really good TV production program where I was able to produce some segments for our TV, our news channel there, which was really fun. But high school Erica, she had a lot of growing to do.
What happened? I assume you've always been in California. So Notre Dame University, you mentioned.
Yeah. High school. That's the name of
high school. Okay. The degree was in ed tech specifically?
So I have my bachelor's degree. And, you know, I'm realizing that perhaps some of our education system is a bit different.
Yeah,
so my bachelor's degree was in social and cognitive science, and then my master's in learning technology. And then my doctorate was in organizational change and leadership.
Fantastic. Now, the reason we got in touch was because I saw you posting a bit of content about cognitive load theory, and prior to coming on live, I kind of shared that a lot of British teachers becoming quite interested in this cognitive research. It's been around for a long, a number of decades. Could we just unpick, or could I ask you to maybe summarise cognitive load theory for busy teachers in a minute or two? Is that possible?
Yes, absolutely. So cognitive load theory is really referring to the fact that our working memory can only hold so much information. And so when we're teaching, and I can talk about that, how that works, especially online, is we really want to focus on helping that working memory to really develop long-term concepts. And to do that, we remove kind of the extra fluff from that so that a learner can really retain the information. And in online learning, that's been really important, or how that's applied is a few different ways. So I think one of the most immediate ways I can think of is when instructors first start teaching online, especially developing asynchronous content. Sometimes the belief is that you can just lecture for an hour or two straight at your camera, or maybe just film a lecture, and that's great. It's there for students. But that's not the case, especially with taking cognitive load into here and applying it. So rather than lecturing for an hour or 2 hours, or just posting something of yourself in your classroom, you want to think about how you can segment the video to give the learners time to process. And also think about how you layer out different, I'll say, chapters, let's say, of that hour lecture. So rather than posting that 60 minutes of one topic, you want to take a look and see how can you segment it so there's different pieces. Maybe instead you do a 5-minute introduction on the topic. That's one video. The next topic is kind of setting up the concepts for it. The third chapter of the video is whatever the topic is. And you're putting it up so that you're taking into account that learner's cognitive load, not throwing in so much information right away. And then within that content too, when developing asynchronous materials for online students, another way that applies is we can think about the Sweller's online media principles here, where really it's taking cognitive load into account. So I talked through we want to be careful to not just upload an hour of video. We want to make sure it's segmented in different ways into shorter chunks, you know, maybe.
Saw you mention on a post some 5 to 7 minute video clips.
Yes.
Is that based on the research or analytics or what people are clicking on?
It is based on research. It is, you can find research there. There is one particular article that I have found really helpful by a gentleman, Guo, G-U-O, on edX. And he really focused, those researchers, and I'm sorry to not be able to give you all of the names of the researchers.
That's all right. We'll dig them out.
But he really, that article really focuses on showing the data behind that particular number. But I was going to say another way cognitive load plays into this is within that video content, there's another factor you want to think about, because you're not generally just talking to a camera. You might have a PowerPoint or, you know, something, resources that help to visualize what you're speaking about. So you want to also think about cognitive load in terms of those visuals. And really the basis of cognitive load is removing those what we call extraneous factors, things that really just take away from what the learner would want to grasp, and focus on really making sure that the information, those graphics or PowerPoints, are simple. We're not having a whole bunch of text everywhere. And that you're making sure to tailor.
We've all been in those lectures, right? With lots of text. I'm assuming the color of the graphics or the text is also going to matter.
Yes, I can't speak. There's definitely people out there that can speak a lot better about this in terms of the colors and how that relates to different screens and what looks better. But generally you want to make sure that they're screen reader friendly, because that's actually another part about accessibility, is that if we have students that need to have materials so that they're accessible on the technologies that they use to access their education.
Can I general tips for high school teachers? What would be your recommendations with cognitive load in mind if they're just kind of delivering online Zoom lessons? What would be your kind of top tip?
For the Zoom lessons and taking into account cognitive load, I think that, again, you can think about potentially not lecturing, you know, directly for the hour, 2 hours, however long that is, and instead breaking up your content into smaller pieces. And then within those chunks, you can, in your Zoom lessons, you can do breakout rooms. That's a great way to add in some active learning, creating a more social environment for those students. And then that gives you the opportunity to give students some problem-based learning activities within that too. So not only are you taking into account cognitive load by not lecturing, let's say, for just an hour, but you're also giving them the opportunity to apply their learning within breakout rooms by giving them problems based on the information that you're talking about and then having them solve it together within those breakout rooms.
And do you, being the EdTech specialist that you are, what are your particular favorite pieces of technology that you relied on throughout the pandemic?
We use, the organization I work with has some proprietary tools that we use to build out the asynchronous components of the work that students go through. So I really use that. I think I'm trying to think of a tool that has stood out to me besides those. I might have to come back to that.
That's all right. Well, I might pick your brains at the end. I'm really interested. I've just started my doctoral studies. I'm really interested to unpick yours. You mentioned educational organization teams.
Yes, organizational change and leadership.
Now, I know this is a silly question, but just for listeners' curiosity, could you give us a brief summary of your kind of focus and maybe your conclusions? I apologize for asking such a simple question.
No, that's not a simple question at all. I'm happy to talk about it. So the I was really happy. I will say that I wrestled a little bit to figure out what I wanted to get my doctorate in. I knew I wanted to get it, and I thought I would get it in learning technologies, but mm-hmm. it ended up being that my job offered a great benefit to pay for this doctorate, and the one that was with the closest to our learning technologies was the organizational change and leadership. And I was able to talk to the program and I asked, well, can I focus my dissertation, you know, in learning technologies? And it ended up being that a large part of that focus of the degree was also understanding and knowing learners and the motivation behind how we learn and the theories mm-hmm. behind that. So it was very, very applicable. So my dissertation, I focused on building, it's an EDD. So I focused really on building a framework for training teams on building effective learning technology. So really laying out that whole structure. So back to the question of what it was exactly is generally, building teams really was the program really is building organization.
Well, I'm doing an EDD and it's about your actual practice. So did you do it full-time, part-time?
Full-time. So it was great because I actually, during my EDD, I used my department for that. So when I say I built for my dissertation, I had to build a lot of training.
Use your resources around you.
Yes. So I was able to interview a lot of people in my department, figure out where the gaps were in the organizations. Mm-hmm. So that was a big part of it, is identifying what the gap is in the team and what the vision and goals are of a department. So I was able to identify that. And then the result was build a course that focused on training the course development team on principles that are important. Because one thing I did identify actually in this part, which was interesting, is that the way our course developers on our team, and just to reiterate, the team that I work on, that I manage, their course developers, that they work together with university faculty to put university degrees online. And so we work really closely with them to develop, talk through what their goals are of the course and talk through what are the best modalities to produce, to create these great courses. So one thing that I realized when I was talking to a lot of people is that the way we define success in developing these courses generally was, are the faculty happy at the end of the course development process? But yes, that is definitely a big success metric, especially in terms of business. But really, at the end of the day, the students are the success metric. Are we making sure that the students are learning what they're supposed to be learning? And so that mm-hmm. was part of the switch that I wanted to make, or that we mm-hmm. needed to make in the department, was making sure that the success metric was not only highlighting the satisfaction of the people that we're working with, but also that we're highlighting in the department that achieving the students' academic goals were part of
it. Now, it sounds very fascinating. When did you complete your studies?
2018, so almost 3 years ago.
Relatively recently. Now, a lot of teachers here in the UK are getting really excited about getting interested in research. What would be your top tip for a teacher who's maybe at kind of bachelor degree level, maybe a master's degree, and wants to start to get into some academic research, you know, particularly Sweller's paper, for example? What would be your tip for those busy people?
Their tips. It's hard for me to say that because I think I have been bad at taking my own tip, because I have gotten myself sucked into a lot of research articles, just downloading them and trying to synthesize things, even if they didn't really relate to what I had to do for schoolwork, because there is some exciting things out there. Okay. So for starters, I might say, go into Google Scholar and look up mm-hmm. something that's interesting to you. So mm-hmm. for me, at one point, it was really digging into cognitive load and understanding video metrics and online learning. So I think zoning in on a topic that's interesting mm-hmm. to you and then really digging into the research on that. And then actually, this is part of why I started my Instagram feed and providing some of those visualizations that are important in online learning, because I did start to realize that there are a lot of resources building up, and we don't always have a lot of time to read all the research. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just easier to get, you know, a quick visualization and to understand how we can apply that. So that was actually part of the inspiration of why I started to create some of those.
Right. It's really interesting. And particularly in a world now where, you know, social media dominates us all, and, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of swipe up feature, the 6 second click. I used to use Vine a number of years ago, and that was a 6 second video. that shows you how old it is. And, you know, now there's TikTok back, and you can do all sorts of things, and you can see them all emerging. So, yeah, it's really, really interesting. I guess one question that I always ask people that I work with is, you know, on kind of workload, you know, we know teachers are very busy people. And I guess in your context, online educators and things like that, the challenge would be slightly different, but broadly the same, you know, delivering lessons, lots of students, those types of things. What workload pressures face, you know, professors, lecturers working in an online higher education tech world? Are they the same as the kind of typical physical classroom, mm-hmm. or are there great differences?
That's a great question. And that's interesting because most of the faculty that we work with actually also teach on ground. So right. they're teaching on ground and then also teaching online and then doing research. And if they're not professors that do research for schools, and they're practitioners, so they're busy with their real jobs. One thing I do love, even though it does make it a lot of work for professors, is that when they're teaching on ground and online, one piece of feedback that I've really loved hearing is when they come back and say, "This was a lot of work, but I'm actually a better instructor because I had to teach online." Because when you are almost kind of forced to, you know, really plan out every single part of your online course because you're developing asynchronous components, it really mm-hmm. kind of, I think, helps professors to really outline where those really fit into the goals for their students. Mm-hmm. And then also kind of forces the brain to think through more of what they're doing on the synchronous component too. So there's just a lot more tying things together. Yeah.
So I'm really glad that I've been talking to you, because I've been trying to do an online course for years. I've got loads of resources and materials. And now I've got my website in a place where I can actually deliver one of my kind of core books mm-hmm. or teacher resources called Mark Plan Teach. And essentially there's 30 core ideas in the book, but I suspect in each chapter alone of the book and the resources, there's lots of ideas inside. So I'm hearing you hit loudly that I need to create lots of five, 7 minute videos and maybe divide one idea into maybe five or six little chunks. Mm-hmm. Would I be on the right track there?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But there's a huge workload ahead for me, isn't there?
yes.
With your work, I know, you know, pandemic aside, with your work with, you know, your own organization and others, can you give us just general insights, maybe not to do with the COVID, but just generally how people are, you know, where's the kind of future? Where are things emerging? What are the kind of general things that people ask you to do? The kind of barriers that kind of unleash people's potentials in organizations? What are your insights and patterns that you see?
Sure. So I work with a team. I oversee a team that works with faculty across several different universities to put their degrees and courses online. And I love that. Another part of my job that I love is that I was able to work on a project to actually get those data sets to show how students are engaging with video. And that has been incredible mm-hmm. to see. And we're starting to use those insights to guide how we continue the conversations with universities. And Generally speaking, where I see trends going is that I see a huge opportunity to use that data, whether it be that or also really starting to pull in. Another thing that I do want to mention too is that there are online learning rubrics out there, and I think that there's more work that can be done to even enhance how those work for building online degrees. So where I see the future of this is pulling in data as it relates to the rubrics also, to really see how we can be more effective online. And then going down the line, I think that there's going to be some more work in the VR world, and applying that to online learning too. I haven't really seen it pop up in anything that I'm doing, but I think there's going to be some really neat things happening there.
One last question, you know, as a result of the pandemic and us all working at home or online, once we do return to normal, we're all back out, you know, at schools, cafes, you know, shopping, those types of things. What do you think the one thing in education might stick?
I think online learning will stick. I mean, it is going to stick. And that's one thing that I like to reflect on is that the interest in distance learning, it's nothing new. Online learning is nothing new. Distance learning, there is an interest in that. I think it was somewhere in the 1800s, no internet back then, but, you know, mailing back and forth to engage with academics that were far away. And then we all know, well, at least here, University of Phoenix was a big thing. And all we've done is continue to evolve. The pandemic has just put a microscope, a big lens on this. But when life goes back to normal, online learning, it's still going to grow because there's so much still to be done in education.
If anything, every teacher around the world's had to fast track their skills very quickly, haven't they? And I guess all our children have got that kind of resilience and those skills very early on, much, much quicker than... maybe you and I didn't have until our mid-20s, perhaps.
I'm so interested to see how they learn. This be exciting. TikTok generation, we're going to have to all do TikToks, I think, to be great instructors.
It's really interesting to see how that's changing. You know, when I think of my 10-year-old son, you know, if I show him some YouTube videos that I'm editing myself, obviously they're education, so sometimes the topics are a bit dry to him, but... there'll be the occasional one that he's hooked in, said, "Dad, oh, that's a really good start." And then after 5 seconds, he's gone. So, Erica, you know, we've done about 25 minutes, which is, you know, my podcast optimum time. So I tend to throw some quick fire questions to people that I'm interviewing. So you can't pause or hesitate. And I want to see if I can catch you off guard and catch you out. So an easy question to begin with today. I know it's very early in the morning for you. What project are you working on this morning?
This morning, I am working on a program that is a physical therapy program at a university. And so really just working on the different complexities. Fun fact, putting physical therapy degrees is quite a beast.
Yeah. Now, we haven't really talked about an organization you work for. Is it Calicia Care?
Oh, okay. So Calicia Care is actually a separate a company that I'm working on with my sister. I work for a company called 2U, and that's the one that I work with to put with my team that puts degrees online. Calicia Care is a post-op recovery business. My sister is a nurse. And so I'm working on that together with her, and I'm really excited to
Great. Some online potential there as well. What do you do to relax?
What do I do to relax? That's interesting because I have not relaxed this whole week. I love going on walks with my dog. That's my favorite.
Yeah, no, I spotted your dog. What's your dog, type of dog you have?
He's a Havapoo, he's Havanese and Poodle.
Oh, fantastic. If I haven't been to LA for a long time, probably 20 years, if I came for 24, 48 hours, where would we go? What would we do? And what would we eat?
We would go to we'd probably go to something like, I really love Cinespia. They do outdoor movie nights. And so right now with the pandemic, they've been bringing back the drive-in concept. So students, you can go with your car and watch a movie, and I love that. So pre-pandemic, you'd be able to watch a movie at the Hollywood Cemetery, bring out a blanket, bring your own food, your own snacks, and they put movies up on there.
Okay, what would be on the menu? What would be on the menu?
Oh, that's tough. What would be on the menu? Okay. Man. I think that I'm supposed to answer these fast.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I'm hoping it's more than there are a lot of preconceptions about burgers in America, isn't it? But you got.
I was gonna say In-N-Out, but that's so basic. Everyone goes In-N-Out is a huge thing in LA. Everyone does that. No, it would be something to do with an outdoor patio and.
Oh, okay, great. Who's your kind of key person to follow on Instagram? I know you're an avid Instagram user. Who's your go-to person?
My go-to
a bit of inspiration.
You know, I honestly have a few. I don't have just one person. I've really been enjoying making friends on Instagram. So I don't think I would just say one. It's been fun to just figure out and delve in people who are kind of in education and taking
great connections. Cognitive load description in less than 10 words.
Keep it simple.
Okay, fantastic. Really, really simple. What book are you reading at the moment?
I have a couple of really great books. One is right there. And it's actually a really basic one. It's called Chicken Soup for... What's the title? Chicken Soup for the Soul, Living Your Dreams. And they're really beautiful stories of people who are living their dreams. And I've really enjoyed... One of the best exercises in the beginning of that book, actually... Not only to talk about a lot about visualization and all the stories include that, one of the best things that I did during this pandemic because of this book is that it told you in the beginning, take out all those little things in your life that kind of bug you a little bit, and it just makes your mind a lot happier and clearer. So I had us do a lot of little fixes around the home, probably like everyone.
Yeah, no, me too. I mean, chicken soup, actually, if you want a really good chicken soup, you have to take out all the little pieces. And when I left full-time teaching to become, what I do now, one of the first things I did was make a real good chicken soup. And I was inspired by another friend who left full-time teaching and did the same. And it's kind of we know chicken soup's good for the soul. It's good to heal you, make you feel very homely, and especially if you're not feeling well. But that's a great book, a really good top tip. What's your biggest career achievement to date?
I mentioned the video data project that I got for my current role at 2U. That was a humongous accomplishment for me, just being able to navigate and figure out how to pull all of those metrics out for all of the programs that 2U works with. So you can go into the back end of this and see video engagement across every single program and every single video.
Fantastic. And post lockdown, where is your first vacation?
I think that it's a toss up between Japan or the Maldives.
Okay, well, that's a really tough decision. Okay, I know we're mid-2021, but let's push you a bit further. What's your predicted trend in education 2022? At least in America.
I think there's going to be more opportunities for students to pursue education outside of the traditional degree.
Okay, who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Have you brought in Ronaldo?
No, not yet. I know Ronaldo really well. We haven't caught up physically, obviously, for a while. But I'll hook up with Ronaldo because I know he's also an EdTech guru here in the UK.
Yeah, Ronaldo Lawrence.
That's a great recommendation. Where can listeners find out more about you online, Erica?
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram. So it's Dr. Erica Maldonado. So DRERIKAMALDONADO. And so I've really been working on there to, like I mentioned, post a lot more easy to grasp images related to online learning.
Fantastic. And my final question is a deep one, this. What do you hope to be your legacy?
I want to, it's nice that you asked this because I've really been reflecting on this so much lately. I think when you asked about 16-year-old Erica, 16-year-old Erica didn't have really very many or any women of color in positions that could, that were inspiring to her. And mm-hmm. so I want to be that for girls at that age. And so everything that I do, I'm
absolutely confident you're already doing that, Erica. So that's a fantastic answer. So that brings us to the end of our podcast, everybody. You've been listening to Ross and Teacher Toolkit, and I've been having a lovely chat with Erica Maldonado from California. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
And keep up the amazing work.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.